In the news this month, the troublesome dwarf planet 2003 UB313 is officially named. The first female space tourist returns from her trip. A Japanese mission to study the sun is launched. Distant galaxies have been spotted by Hubble and Subaru. And we also have the latest news from Mars. On September the 13th, 2003 UB313 was officially named Eris, and her satellite named Dysnomia. Listeners familiar with Greek mythology might appreciate how appropriate these names are. Eris is the Greek goddess of warfare and strife, who stirs up jealousy and envy to cause anger and fighting among men. She was not invited to the wedding of Achilles' parents, Peleus and Thetis, and became so incensed that she decided to cause a quarrel amongst the goddesses that led to the Trojan War. Eris, the dwarf planet, has been the cause of a certain amount of anger and fighting amongst astronomers. Eris is slightly larger than Pluto, and this reopened the debate about what constitutes a planet. If Pluto were a planet, then Eris would also have to be a planet, making 10 known planets in the solar system, with the possibility of more being discovered. After much debate and disagreement at the meeting of the International Astronomical Union in Prague this summer, it was decided that objects such as Pluto and Sedna should be classed as dwarf planets, leaving 8 regular planets. Some astronomers were so upset at the demotion of Pluto, they have started a petition to get it reinstated. Eris' satellite has been named Dysnomia, after the daughter of Eris, known as the demon spirit of lawlessness. Eris was discovered by Mike Brown, Chad Trujillo, and David Rabinowitz, in observations made in October 2003. It is approximately 2,400 kilometres across, and currently lies 97 astronomical units from the Sun. Eris has an orbital period of 560 years, and is visible from the Earth from late summer to early winter. It has an apparent magnitude of about 19, making it visible with a good amateur telescope. The first female space tourist has successfully completed her excursion to the International Space Station. Anousheh Ansari, an Iranian-born American businesswoman, took off from Baikonur in Kazakhstan on the 18th of September. She is reported to have paid more than $20 million for the privilege. Ms. Ansari described herself as an ambassador for attracting private investment into space programs. Her family sponsored the X Prize, which honoured the first private space plane to make 2 successful flights into low Earth orbit. Whilst on board the ISS, Ms. Ansari carried out experiments on back pain for the European Space Agency. She returned safely to Earth on the 29th of September. Solar B, a Japanese mission to study the Sun, took off from Uchinoura at the southern tip of Japan in the early morning of the 23rd of September. It would take 2 weeks to transfer to its sun-synchronous polar orbit, where it will be able to observe the Sun without nights for 8 months of the year. As is customary on Japanese missions, the satellite will be given a new name once it is ready to begin its work. Solar B will be investigating solar flares, hugely energetic explosions in the Sun's atmosphere, which release energy equivalent to tens of millions of atomic bombs in just a few seconds. UK mission scientist Professor Louise Hara said, "Solar B acts essentially like a microscope, probing the fine detail of what the magnetic field is doing as it builds up to a flare. A solar flare occurs when the contortions of the Sun's magnetic field cause field lines to lift up off the surface of the Sun and collide. When this occurs, a huge amount of energy is released. A blast of radiation at all wavelengths across the electromagnetic spectrum is emitted, and charged particles are accelerated out from the Sun into the solar system." Astronomers understand the flaring process quite well, but they cannot currently predict when flares will occur. With information gathered by Solar B, this should change, as astronomers use new insights to make better forecasts of the Sun's behaviour. 2 new studies reported in the journal Nature have revealed that galaxies were forming just 700 million years after the Big Bang, but that large clusters of galaxies were rare at this time. Masanori Ie of the National Astronomical Observatory of Japan and colleagues used the Subaru telescope in Hawaii to observe a tiny patch of sky. They observed the oldest known galaxy, named IOK-1, which has a redshift of 6.96. Redshift is a phenomenon in which the light emitted by an object is shifted towards the red end of the spectrum, due to the object's motion away from the observer. In the case of very distant objects, such as distant galaxies, the redshift is caused by the expansion of space between the objects and the observer, stretching the wavelength of the emitted photons. This is called the cosmological redshift. The highest confirmed redshift previously had been 6.6. IOK-1 is now the oldest galaxy ever detected. Its redshift of 6.96 means that the light observed by astronomers from this galaxy was emitted just 750 million years after the Big Bang. This means that galaxy formation was underway when the universe was just 6% of its current age. In another recent Nature paper, Richard Bowens and Garth Ullingworth of the University of California at Santa Cruz used the Hubble Space Telescope to observe an even smaller patch of sky, known as the Hubble Ultra Deep Field. They detected hundreds of galaxies with ages of less than 1 billion years, but only one candidate galaxy at 700 million years. This lack of galaxies at very high redshifts fits in well with the generally accepted model that describes galaxies being built up by mergers of small galaxies into larger ones, so that at just 700 million years old, the universe was too young for many large luminous galaxies to have formed. A new instrument called Dazzle will be fitted to the Very Large Telescope in Chile next month, which will hopefully detect objects out to redshift 7.7 or even 8.7. The Hubble Telescope, if it is refurbished soon by NASA, should be able to see out to redshift 10, while Hubble's successor, the James Webb Telescope, which is due for launch early next decade, is expected to reach out to redshift 15. And now the news from Mars. The Mars rover Opportunity has reached the rim of Victoria Crater, its destination since late 2004. Victoria Crater is half a mile wide, about five times wider than Endurance Crater, which the robotic explorer studied for 6 months earlier in its mission. Victoria Crater has rugged walls with layers of exposed rock. Steve Squires, principal investigator for NASA's twin rovers, said, "This is a geologist's dream come true. Those layers of rock, if we can get to them, will tell us new stories about the environmental conditions long ago. We especially want to learn whether the wet era that we found, recorded in the rocks close to the landing site, extend further back in time. The way to find that out is to go deeper, and Victoria may let us do that." Opportunity and its twin rover Spirit have been granted an extra year's funding. Their extended mission starts on October 1st, when the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter began its main science phase. Mars Express, the European Space Agency's Mars orbiter, recently captured images of the face on Mars, made famous by the American Viking 1 orbiter in 1976. A NASA press release in July 1976 said the formation resembled a human head. NASA scientists knew at the time that the likeness was just a trick of the light, caused by the angle of the sun striking the surface of the rock formation and casting some interesting shadows. And the new pictures from the Mars Express of the Cydonia region in which the face is seen confirm this. There does appear to be another rock formation in the same region which is said to look like a human skull, but I'm not convinced. And some news just in. On Thursday the 28th of September, all the streetlights in Reykjavik and a number of other towns in Iceland were switched off for half an hour so that residents could get a better view of the night sky. Andri Sneer Magnusson, a writer, got the idea as a way to launch a film festival. An astronomer gave a commentary on national radio about what could be seen while the lights were out. Unfortunately, the weather was rainy and cloudy, but this did not deter the thousands of people who turned out for a spot of stargazing.
That was the Jodcast News. For more news and the full show, go to www.jodcast.net.